Okay, Priya Ratha. So, if you wonder why I'm sitting here and talking about, you know, analyzing and even being critical now and then of ISKCON and so on, well, there's a positive reason for that. You know, somewhere back in the early 80s, when I was making the Swedish magazine Krishna's World, I once stepped into, because I was writing an article about reincarnation, a series, so I stepped into the Theosophy Library downtown Stockholm, because I discovered that the Theosophists had a library. And there were two ancient-looking women standing there, taking care of that. And I could see they were surprised that a young man just knocked on the door and wanted to come in and borrow books from them. And it seemed to me then, you know, I thought this Theosophy movement was kind of big. It was kind of hot back among certain intellectuals in the 19th century or so. But then, you know, they were standing there, the ladies standing there now, and they were old. And it wasn't so hot anymore. Not so many interested anymore. They had conflicts and all of that. And they were probably there trying to upholding, you know, their tradition heroically. And I thought, you know, how is it going to be with ISKCON after 100 years or so? Well, now it's almost 50 years. And you see, you know, how these groups, it's almost like a standard procedure, so to speak. Groups appearing around some kind of learned person, you know, prophet or teacher or guru, who may be teaching, you know, the absolute eternal truths. But then somehow or other it kind of starts to dwindle gradually, and those who are left there in that inner circle don't want to admit that, and they pretend everything is just the way it was from the beginning. And while others stand outside and, you know, what happened to them, you know, where did it go? And I really, honestly don't know what is the status of ISKCON in that respect, but at least here in Sweden, devotees come to me and they say this. It's, you know, it's almost finished, there's not anything left, there's no preaching going on, no, none of that. And of course, I mean, we had like three traveling Sankirtan parties in Sweden, and we had, you know, again, magazine and active radio and all kinds of activities was spreading this Krishna conscious, beautiful knowledge, which was, you know, is what I always, what I'm interested in, was interested in, and why I joined, actually. I joined because I wanted to get out in the world and spread, you know, good thing, good news. But then, and I'm sure that's also how most of those movements, groups, or whatever started, by pioneers who were, yes, look here, what a beautiful knowledge, and it helps me and it can help the world. But then it tends to dwindle, and you know, the cults, as we call them, that were in abundance back in the 70s, seems like they are gone now, most of them, or they turned into some, I don't know what, cultural groups or something, upholding it, the tradition, meeting now and then, eating and having a cup of tea or something, you know, and social clubs. And, well, I mean, in many ways, that's probably better than being cults, you know, with this kind of come join us and give up everything else and work 24 hours a day for our leader. That kind of thing. So that's nice. It's gone. But then I'm kind of looking, thinking, you know, what is the, where do I feel I can fit in? What can I identify with? And I really always come back to this, that it's a lifestyle, it's a knowledge that everyone can use, it's universal. That's why I came to this Hare Krishna movement in the first place. I hated such cults and religious groups and all of that. It was not that, you know, yeah. There was a deeper conviction behind it that, yes, there is a knowledge here. There's something here that makes, it's logical, that makes sense, that works. Yes, answers my questions. And yes, you can live it. But then I, to be honest, deep inside, or maybe not even that deep inside, doubted if the way we lived it was the right way and was, or the best way. And when I look back now, it's quite clear, I mean, to most of us, I think, that we were, you know, we slipped into the fanaticism. Department and, you know, all of that. So all kinds of neophyte mistakes we did, which I think are done basically in all these kind of groups, most of them, especially when they become so fully absorbing when it comes to our dedication and surrender and engagement like that. But yes, here we are. And, well, I'm not being pessimistic here about ISKCON. ISKCON seems to flourish like anything in India, probably in Russia. In certain places, being less flourishing, but you know, that comes and goes. But the reason I'm speaking this and dwelling on the subject is that, well, I'm myself generally interested in this, you know, what, how to make, how to start and make a real good beneficiary, what do you call it? Yeah, benign and you know, movement or whatever that continues to flourish and grow healthy, like whatever, anything you would plant. Being properly nourished, but also in this case attractive and relevant, practically useful in the world of today. You know, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he kind of, I think somebody used the word, transplanted Indian Vaishnava culture into all different cultures and countries. Well, you could say planting a seed and getting a little bud up there. And when he left, before he left the world, this world, he expressed his concern that will these youngsters be able to continue this, to take care of this, or will it dwindle and die? And I understand that concern or doubt very well. But you know, if it dwindles and dies, as we could call it, the knowledge that is there, you know, the teachings, all these books and all of that, it of course remains, because these are timeless truths. So someone else will come then and yeah, follow that person or that person, which we see all the time anyway going on, right? Guru here, guru there. And some teach the right thing, some teach strange speculations. But what is there at the center of it is this knowledge. Is this Dharma, is this... Yeah, Sanatana Dharma. Which is not an Indian religion, it's a Sanskrit word referring to that intrinsic constitutional position of us living beings. So yeah, But then, you know, what is so interesting is that Srila Prabhupada, he taught, it's there in his writings and in his speaking, that, and he did it himself. You have to be able to adapt to the different cultural circumstances, the time and age, place. So it's not that he said you have to preserve it exactly the same outward form, but preserve the essence, the knowledge, that which is, you know, the eternal truth there. The outward forms, they may change depending on time, you know, again, time and place. Yukta Vairagya. So I would say this Yukta Vairagya is much of the secret that will determine whether this is going to dwindle and disappear or start to flourish again.